We're beginning now the 16th and last perek of the Masechta, top of Kuf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. So in this perek, we're going to complete the various dinim that we were talking about, where evidence comes that a woman's husband is dead and what that means in terms of her getting remarried. So first we're going to talk about where there's yibum involved, and then we're going to talk about the actual what type of evidence is good enough for that purpose. Mishnah says, Ha'isha shaholach bailav tzara salam dinas yan. Suppose a woman and her tzara went overseas. Now, at the end of the previous perek, we had a case where she and her husband went to Medina Sayyam, and the question is, what about her tzara? And the question is about if they had a child, if they didn't have a child, if she has a yavam, etc. So now let's talk about the man himself has two wives. He went with one of them to Medina Sayyam. The other one stayed back home. And then people came and told her that your husband died. So now here we're not dealing with the matter. Now we learned in the previous perek that a tzara can't give eidos for the other one. So we're not talking about, so let's give the two wives names. We won't use Rachel and Leah because those we've been using throughout the Masechta for sisters. Here it's not sisters. Here it's two unrelated women. So we'll call them Sara and Rivka. So we're not talking about, for example, Sarah stayed back home and Rivka came and told her, because then we said in the previous perek that we don't believe any eidos from Rivka because she may be trying to mess up Sarah. So we're talking about that other eidim came, two eidim, whatever, came and told her that their husband is dead. Fine. So the problem is that she has a tzara. Now remember, when it comes to yibum, if the man has children with any of his wives, or even if he has children out of wedlock, but fine, that's not very common. But if he has any children even mamzerim, we learned earlier in the Masechta, then they still all his wives are potter from yibum. So now, you've got Sara and Rivka. Sara stayed home. Rivka went with him. Now the question is, from the point of view that her husband is dead, sure, Sara could remarry. But from the point of view, we need to know, now obviously if Sarah had any children with him, there's nothing to talk about, then she's free to remarry because then she herself knows she has children from him. But if she doesn't yet, then the question becomes, did Rivka maybe have children with him? So Vova Omrala Mesbailich, so they told her that your husband died, Loiti Nosev Loiti Siabim, so she's not allowed at that point to get married to anybody else outside the family, that is, or to do yibum, Ajateda Shemul Mumberes Hit Sarasa, until she knows whether she, her tzara, is pregnant, because if her tzara is pregnant, then you have to consider. Now remember, if the tzara has any kind of viable baby, whether it's a boy or a girl, then either way, they're all going to be potter from yibum. So we need to wait until we find out what the situation is. Now, why does she have to stay in? Now we're going to talk about in the Gemara how long she has to stay in limbo like that, and also we're going to talk about why can't she just do chalitza and she'd be fine either way. Let her do, assuming the yavam is still here in town. On the face of it, let her do chalitza, and one way or the other, we're covered. Either she needed chalitza and now she's free, or she didn't need chalitza and no harm, no foul. So we'll see in the Gemara why we can't do that. But we'll also see how long she does have to wait till she finds out what happened with her tzara. Now, what about on the other hand, if she has a mother-in-law who was who was also in Medina Siyam? Now, so let's say when her husband went overseas. So let's say, for example, in this last case of the Mishnah, we don't have to be saying that the husband went with one of his wives. It wouldn't really matter for this purpose. The point is that he still has a mother who is still married to his father. So her husband is Yitzchak. So let's use different names so we're not confusing things. So her husband is Moshe, who's married to Tzipora. And there's always the possibility that Tzipora herself is pregnant. Now, suppose that up until now, Moshe, her husband, has not had any brothers. So if Moshe dies, then we know he has no other wives, no brothers. So if he dies, then his wife will be potter from chalitza or yibum because there's nobody to do chalitza or yibum with. But now, let's say she has a mother-in-law in Medina Siyam. Do we have to be concerned that maybe that mother-in-law herself had another baby, and we learned earlier in the Masechta, if she were to have a baby, specifically if it was a boy, and he was born even a minute before the other his older brother passed away, then there will be a zika with him. So in this case, for example, so she's got a husband, Moshe. Moshe's parents, Yecheved and Amram, are also out of town. Does this woman back home, Moshe's wife, Tzipporah, have to be concerned that her mother-in-law, Yecheved, may have gotten pregnant and may have had a baby boy right before her husband passed away? No, she doesn't have to worry about that. Eina Cheshesh, she doesn't have to worry about it for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. Rashi explains the basic thing over here. When you think about it, in the first case of the Mishnah with the Tzara, whatever kind of baby the Tzara has, whether it's a boy or a girl, as long as it's viable, is going to make it unnecessary to do Yibum or Chalitza. The majority of women do become pregnant, and of them, the majority of them give birth to viable children. So therefore, there's a very high likelihood that her tzara had a baby, but we can't be sure about that. On the other hand, in the Sefer, you have like this. Approximately 50-50 are boys and girls. We actually have nowadays statistics tell us that there are slightly more boys than girls, but the Gemara is going to assume that it's not so, that it's actually 50-50. And maybe because of what it is really, I mean, you have 50-50 of boys, but you have slightly over 50% boys, according to modern statistics in most countries. But of those boys, a certain number of them don't. Baby boys tend to be more fragile than baby girls. A higher number of them have problems that cause them to die young. So therefore, I guess by the time you get to the point of a viable baby, you have pretty well approximately equal boys and girls. Whatever the case, assuming then that boys and girls are born equally. Now, you also have then, of the boys, some of them are stillbirth, so otherwise non-viable. So once you add all that together, then the number of boys who are born that's viable actually drops below 50%. Therefore, it's not a roiv anymore. Therefore, we don't have to worry about that the mother-in-law had a baby, because there, in order for it to be an issue, it would dafka have to be a baby boy and be viable, and the number of those we're assuming is less than 50%. So that's why Eina Cheshesh. On the other hand, Yotza Maleya, but what if her mother-in-law left town already pregnant? Cheshesh, then the daughter-in-law does have to be concerned that her mother-in-law was pregnant, so that wounds the Chazakah. So like this, we could have said that the chances that she became pregnant and that she had a baby boy and that baby boy was viable, all those things, we don't have to really worry about the combination of those factors. But now that she's already pregnant, then we do have to worry about that the baby might have been a boy, and then therefore, so she might be a Shemeres Yavim at this point. Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yehuda says, even in that case, she doesn't have to be concerned, because after all, she might have miscarried, or it might have been a girl. So we'll see in the Gemara what Rabbi Yeshua versus the Chachamim hold. One point is, Rishonim make a point, that Ramban makes a point, for example, that once we say, according to the Tanakhama, that we know the mother-in-law was pregnant before she left, then already to say that there's a likelihood that she miscarried the baby is to say that there's a likelihood of Misa, and we often say in the Gemara, Misa lo shchicha, that death is not, relatively speaking, that common. In other words, it's not common enough for us to say that there's a good likelihood that baby in fact was stillborn or miscarried. So if she hadn't been pregnant in the first place, to say that maybe she became pregnant and maybe there's a baby and so forth, that the Mishnah is saying we can discount. But once we know there's already a baby, then Misa lo shchicha. The Meiri points out another point as well. He says, usually most spontaneous miscarriages happen within the first 3 months. But during the first 3 months, the mother-in-law herself is not necessarily visibly pregnant. Usually in Shas, we say, we've learned earlier in the Masechta, that a woman is not visibly pregnant until she's 3 months in. So therefore, the very fact that she was visibly pregnant before she left, meaning that it was more than 3 months, that alone weakens the possibility that there was a miscarriage. And therefore, so that's why the Tanakhama is saying she has to be choshesh. But even then, Rabbi Yeshua is saying you don't have to worry. So the Gemara starts off, my heat sarasa. Now, in the first part of the Mishnah, was saying again that she and her husband and her tsara went to Medina Sayyam and they told her mes bailech. So we said she has to wait until she finds out whether he tsarasa is pregnant. So what's that expression, he tsarasa? She her tsara. What else is the tsara if not a she? It means ha kamash mulan lahot tsara hu dechashinen avlat tsara achriti lechashinen. What the Mishnah wants you to know is we do have to be concerned about what might have happened with that tzara. So Rachel stayed back home. Leah went on the cruise or whatever with her husband. The question is whether Leah herself is pregnant. Once we find out that Leah is not pregnant, then, or that she was and she miscarried, and obviously now at this point their husband is dead, so there's not going to be any more children for him, then we don't have anything to worry about any further, and then she can do Yibum or Chalitza respectively. Or vice versa. If Leah did have a child, then that's it. Rachel is potter from Chalitza or Yibum, and then she can go freely remarry. The point is, we only have to be concerned about Leah. We do not have to be concerned, what if while they were out of town, what if this husband of theirs went and married a third wife, and she became pregnant? To that extent, we don't have to be choshesh. So once Rachel finds out what happened with Leah, then she's safe. We don't have to worry that there might be also, that they're not Rachel and Leah, we said Sarah and Rivka, whatever. Once Sarah, who's back home, finds out that what happened with Rivka, whether she had a baby or not, she doesn't have to worry that maybe while they were out of town, their husband also married another woman, Dina, and then we have to figure out what happened with her. That, to that extent, we're not choshesh. Now, the Mishnah had said, we said that she can't marry and she can't, that the one who stayed home, Sarah, like we're calling her, can't get married and can't do Yibum until she finds out what happened with her Sarah. So the question is, Bishlema Yabumi Loi, I understand why she can't do Yibum. The Duma Mi Abra, after all, her Sarah might be pregnant. And then if it turns out that she did have a baby, then the one who stayed home, Sarah, is doing Yibum when it's not Yibum. It's actually an Issur of Eshesach, which is an Issur Daraisa, and in fact, an Issur Kores. So therefore, that's why she can't do Yibum. Ella loyti nose amai, but why can't she get married to anybody else? Holachacha roiv noshim, why can't we follow the chazaka of most women? The roiv noshim is abris v'yodis. Most women do become pregnant and do have children. So therefore, isn't there a very high likelihood that during the time when they were away, Rivka, her tzara, did become pregnant, did have a baby, and therefore that she's potter. So why should we have to worry about just in case that didn't happen? The fact that the Mishnah is saying we have to worry about that, Lema Rab Meir hi d'chayish l'miyota, would that mean that our Mishnah is specifically according to Rab Meir who's concerned about the miyot? We see, so Rashi brings actually from a Gemara in Cholin, where we find that Rav Meir is concerned about the miyot. Namely, it says over there, at one point they discovered some kusim, the infamous kusim, the ones whose ancestors were brought by Sancheiriv to repopulate the land of the Ten Shvatim after the Ten Shvatim were taken into Golos for hundreds of years. There was a question whether they're true Gerim or not. In Rav Meir's times, they discovered some of them worshipping an image of a dove on Har Grizim, and Rav Meir, who's choshish for the miyot, says that on that basis, we have to treat them all as goyim, to be on the safe side, and therefore their wine is also and so forth. So the mayor holds that you have to be concerned even for the miyot. Really, actually, the Gemara is going to give another example now of where a mayor is concerned about the miyot. But anyway, the point is that he is. So are we going to have to say that a mayor is the author of our Mishnah and he's chayish lemiyota? Because according to the Chachamim, why should we worry? According to the Chachamim, the likelihood is much greater that Sarah is in fact potter from Chalitza or Yibum, because while Rivka, her Sarah, was away on the cruise with her husband, she became pregnant. Most women become pregnant, after all, of childbearing age. Most women who are pregnant give birth to babies. Again, we don't care whether it's a boy or a girl. Either way, she'll be potter from Chalitza or Yibum, as long as it's viable, and most babies are viable. So according to the Chachamim, there should be no reason that she can't go and that Sarah can't go and freely remarry. Only according to the mayor on the face of it, that Chayish Lemiyota, would there be a problem? Now, the problem with that is the halacha is not like Rav Meir, And on the other hand, ours is a stam Mishnah, and we would rather paskin halacha like it. So the answer is no. You could even say our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, because we have to distinguish between two kinds of roiv. The Gemara calls them ruba de isei kamon and ruba de lesei kamon. Ruba de isei kamon is we actually have all of the items or whatever it is in front of us, and we have to see which is the majority. So examples the Gemara is going to give are, for example, when the Sanhedrin is voting on something. So we have all the dayanim in front of us. We know how each of them is ruling, and we can figure out which is the majority. And you have other examples like that. Versus you have what's called ruba de lesei kamon, meaning a statistical roiv. So it's not, we don't have, so for example, when we're saying that most women become pregnant, it's not like we have all the women in the world in front of us and we go and see. Statistically, we know that that's how the world works, is that most women become pregnant. But that doesn't necessarily tell us anything about this particular woman. Maybe she belongs to that roiv, maybe not. She's got her own independent body. And then just because the roiv of people are a certain way doesn't mean that she is. So that kind of thing is called ruba de lesei kamon, and that kind is a weaker kind of roiv. So therefore, so the Gemara says afilu tamei rabbanon. You could even say that our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim ki as the rabbanon baser ruba. You know when the Chachamim follow the roiv and say we can ignore the miut is ruba de isei kamon. It's only when the roiv is there in front of us. They're going teisha chanuyas. One example is the case of 9 stores and a 10th one. You have a case where there are 10 stores in town. 9 of them sell kosher meat. 1 of them sells non-kosher meat. So if a person in such a town finds a package of meat in the street and he doesn't know which one of the 10 stores it came from, then we're able to say that the chances are 90% chance that it came from one of the stores that sell kosher meat, and therefore that it itself is kosher. So that would be an example of a ruba de isei kamon, because we have the stores in front of us in town. Another example, the Gemara says, would be the Sanhedrin. Another example would be when the Sanhedrin votes on something. If you have a majority of votes, then you follow the majority. Okay, when it comes to dinei nefashos, you need a super majority. But whatever, the point is that basically in votes of the Sanhedrin, we follow the majority. Again, we have all of the votes in front of us. So now Tosfos points out even Reb Meir necessarily has to agree that in that case we can't be choshish lemiyota. The pasuk itself tells us achri rab lahatas. For that matter, Tosfos says by the 9 stores, by the case of the meat, also we don't find Reb Meir arguing with the Chachamim on that. So Tosfos says you're right. We're not mentioning the test chanuris and the Sanhedrin. We don't mean in those exact cases Reb Meir would disagree. We mean we can find similar cases where we have a ruba de isei kamon and Reb Meir will disagree. But you're right. In those particular cases, he wouldn't. Anyway, avol ruba de lesei kamon. But now here we're talking about a ruba de lesei kamon. We're talking only about a statistical roiv, that statistically most women become pregnant, and statistically of them, most of them give birth to viable babies. So with that, we can say the Chachamim don't necessarily go according to the roiv because, okay, this is true of most women, but we have no way of knowing that Rivka, who went on the cruise with Sarah and her husband, is part of that roiv. Maybe not. So therefore, that's not a basis enough for Sarah to be on safe ground to say, okay, I can go and get remarried because of such a weak roiv. So the Gemara says, why? Vahare kotnu ktana de ruba de lesei kamon hi. Consider the case of a kotnu ktana doing yibum, which is also, we're dealing with a ruba de lesei kamon. We're talking about a statistical roiv, as we're going to say in the next couple of lines. Va'azli rabbanon basa ruba. And even then, the chachamim follow the roiv. Titania, namely, we learn in a braisa. We learned this earlier in the Masechta. Kotnu ktana lechotzin v'lemiyam min divir ameir. Reb Meir says that a cotton or a ktana cannot do chalitza or yibum. So the other chachamim said to Reb Meir, you said well about not doing chalitza. We agree with you on that. Ish kosev ksiv v'parasha. After all, the pasuk uses the pasuk when it talks about chalitza uses the word ish. It says v'im lo yachvitza ish. So therefore we know he has to be an ish. We know he can't be a cotton when he's doing chalitza. and we make a hekesh between the woman and the man, that once we say he has to be a gadol, then she has to be a gdola as well. So fine, they say to the mayor, we agree with you on that point. We did learn earlier in the Masechta, actually in the Perek about Mitzvahs Chalitza, we said that actually we said that there are different opinions on that. In fact, the mayor himself actually had said that the Chalitza of Ktana would be posel, meaning that it has a certain effect. It posels from Yibum, it just doesn't make her mutter to marry others. We also had an opinion of Rabbi Yossi over there, who says that actually the woman can be a ktana, but whatever. The other chachamim who disagree with all of that, they say to the mayor, when you're saying that a katan cannot do chalitza or a ktana cannot do chalitza, then fine, we agree with that. Ela matam ein miyadmin. But they say to the mayor, you're saying that a katan or a ktana can't do yibum. Why not? After all, it's not like you need das for Yibum. We learned earlier in the Masechta that even if it's b'shoigeg or b'oynas or whatever, then the bia of Yibum is still chal. Keep in mind, of course, you know, midrabanan, you need kedushin for it, you need maimer, but midaraisi, you need no such thing. So there's no reason that you should need das. So at least on a daraisa level, what's the problem? Omalahem, so the mayor answers them, the problem is cotton shemi yimotzi sris, because the problem is the cotton, the boy, it may turn out that he's a sris, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, is a person who develops certain physical characteristics showing that his body is never going to mature normally. So therefore, he's going to be incapable of fathering children. And a sris is excluded from the dinim of Yibum and Chalitza. If he were to do Yibum, then it's like any other case where you're also to marry the brother's wife, and it would actually be, rather than Yibum, it would be the Isser of Eish HaSof, which is an Isser Karis. And similar. Now, when he's a boy, you can't know yet. A boy below Bar Mitzvah, anyway, hasn't developed the signs of maturity yet. So you never know whether he's going to develop those or whether he's going to develop the signs of a Sris. And Tana Shemeti Motze Ilonis, similarly with the Tana, she might turn out to be an Ilonis, the female counterpart of that. So then, says your mayor, if you're going to allow them to do Yibum when they're younger, it may come out that inadvertently they've had relations with an Erva, because it may turn out that he, as a Swiss, or she, as an Ilonis, is out of the picture as far as Chalitza or Yibum as far as Yibum is concerned. So we see that the mayor is choshesh for the miut, whereas the chacham say you don't have to worry about that. You can follow the majority of ktanim, v'roiv ktanim lav swissin inu. Most boys are not swissim. And you follow most girls, and most girls are not Ilonis. So we see, therefore, that even when it comes to a ruba de lesse kamon, now here we're talking about a statistical roiv. We don't have all the boys and all the girls in the world in front of us to be able to determine, to be able to look at them and see how many are Ilonis, how many are Suisim, and how many are Ilonis, and how many are not. And still, the Chacham say that even though it's only a statistical roiv, which is weaker, a ruba de lesse kamon, nevertheless, they say we can follow it even to the extent that they can do Yibum. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that if a cotton does Yibum, it's not really a full-fledged Yibum. It only has the force of Maimer. But the point is that the Chachamim will allow it, and they're not worried about that he might be Pegea Be'era. So it can't be that the Chachamim make a distinction. When the Chachamim say that we follow the Roiv and we ignore the Miut, that seems to apply whether it's a Ruba de Isse Kamon or Ruba de Lesse Kamon. So how would that work then in our Mishnah, where the Roiv of Tsaris, the Roiv of women do become pregnant, and the Roiv of those women do give birth to healthy babies? So our Mishnah, which says that Sarah, who stayed back home, is not going to be able to marry out until she finds out what happened with her Tzara Rivka, that can't be according to the Chachamim. Okay, the Gemara says, you're right. Okay, necessarily we have to say that our Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Now, so far, if we left it at that, it might well mean that the Halacha is not like our Mishnah, because again, the Halacha is not like the mayor in that regard. And Tosfos gets into some discussion about that, are we in fact choshesh for the miut? And in general, we say that not. So far, if we left it at that, it would mean that our Mishnah is not according to the mayor. But now the Gemara continues, b'mayu kimta k'da mayor. So what are you telling me? That we've established that the first part of our Mishnah is according to the mayor. Ema sefer, but look at the second part of the Mishnah, where it says, hoysala chamois, where we said that if this woman who stayed home, so her husband went on a business trip or whatever, and he has a mother-in-law who also lives out of town. He has a mother, rather. So his parents are still alive. So his mother and his mother is still of childbearing age, which, you know, I mean, you're gonna think that might not be very common. But the fact is, you know, it's common enough. I mean, here in Crown Heights, you have several families like that, where when the daughter is going to the chuppah, the mother is still herself of childbearing age and very often has children of her own at the same time or sometimes even after that. Sometimes you have in families here where you have the uncle or aunt is younger than the nephew or niece. Anyway, so it is certainly possible. And the Mishnah continued that if she has a mother-in-law out of town, Eina Chosheshes, then we said she doesn't have to worry about that her mother-in-law might have had a child and therefore that she has a zika for Yibum, because what if it was a boy and it was born before her husband died? So we say Eina Chosheshes, she doesn't have to worry about that there may have been a brother-in-law, a Yavam, born before her husband died. So Amai, so if you're gonna tell me that our Mishnah goes according to the mayor, why should she not have to be concerned? Holochacha Roiv Nashim, again, let's follow most women, but Roiv Nashim is Abbas for Yodas. Most women become pregnant and have babies. So again, wouldn't you have the same problem? Isn't there a high likelihood that, or it doesn't even have to be a high likelihood, even if it's only a mute, then that should be enough for her to be concerned about that. So in other words, Rashi says, we have on the face of it, the Gemara is assuming, we have a roiv, that most women become pregnant. Within that, we have a miut. Within that, we have a minority of them are boys, but still, the mayor is concerned for a miut. So therefore, he should be concerned about the possibility that there was a boy born, and therefore that in fact that she would have a zika. So what are we saying? Eina chosheshes. So a holach achar roiv noshim, roiv noshim misabes v'yodas. Most women become pregnant and have children. Among them, a miut may have boys, but still, the mayor is concerned for a miut. The answer is no, because in this case, you have a double miut. Miut mapilis. First of all, among the women who are pregnant, a minority of them miscarry, and within the ones who don't miscarry, v'chala yodas mechtes chorim mechtes nekevis, among the ones who do give birth to viable babies, it's half boys, half girls. So smurich miut de mapilas, the mechtes and the kevis. So if you combine together the miut who miscarry with the half who are girls, the result is that the viable boys are a minority. So let's say, for example, let's make up some statistics. Let's say, for example, that of the women who become pregnant, 2% of them suffer miscarriages or have stillbirths or whatever. So that leaves us 98% that have viable babies. Of that 98%, let's say 49%, half, give birth to boys, and 49% to girls. Well, unlike in the first part of our Mishnah, where if Rivka, who went on the trip with the husband, has a baby, it doesn't matter whether it was a boy or a girl, either way, as long as it's a viable baby, then they're both potter from Chalitza or Yibum. Here in the Sefer, to make Sarah Chayev and Yibum, it would have to be that it was a boy and that it was viable. So once you consider those statistics, the boys, let's say, amount to 49% of the births. Well, 49% is less than, not only 49% is a miut, fine, we said a mayor is concerned for a miut, but it's a miut within a miut. Because what you have is, again, you have you have to consider the miut, not really a miut within a miut, but you have a miut on top of a miut, really, because you have a miut that miscarry and a miut that are boys. So therefore, she doesn't have to be worried about it. But the question still is v'leichush. So still, according to the mayor, shouldn't she have to be concerned? Fine, the schorim are the miut, but isn't a mayor concerned about that kind of miut? And the answer is, Dilma kiven de'ichzaka l'shuk l'chayish. Because the difference might be, because at this point, when her husband leaves town, at this point, she has a chazaka that if her husband dies at this point, she's not going to need Yibum. Because after all, at this point, her husband has no brothers. So fine, he also has no sons, but there's no brothers for him to do Yibum. So when her husband leaves town, she has a chazaka of that she's going to be mutter lashuk, that she's going to be allowed to remarry after her husband dies. So now you want to say that we want to undo that chazaka on the basis of the potential miut that her mother-in-law may have had a boy that loy chayish, that Reb Meir is not going to be concerned about. Well, then the question is, Reisha de Ichsek Yibum to Yavim. Well, then, by that logic in the Reisha, where the Chazaka was that she's going to need Yibum, because in the first part of the Mishnah, we're talking about that up till now, their husband has not had any children. Now he and his wife went to Medinas Yam. So yes, there's the possibility that she had a baby. But why are we saying in the Mishnah that she can't do Yibum? On the face of it, she had a chazaka up until this point, because before her husband and his other wife left town, at that point, if the husband had died, she would have been, one or the other of them would have been chayiv in Yibum or chalitza. So now also we should say that chazaka should continue, and Reb Meir should hold, therefore, that Reb Meir should hold that the chazaka continues. She is, the chazaka remains, whether we talk about Rory Rumiot, that doesn't necessarily undo the chazaka, therefore she should be able to do Yibum. So what's the difference that in the Reisha we're concerned about the miut, and we're saying that there's the possibility that her tzara had a baby in the Dinas Hayam, and therefore that changes the chazaka and makes it that she goes from being able to do Yibum to not being able to do Yibum, and we're saying that's according to the mayor, whereas in the Sefer, we're not saying that the possibility that the mother-in-law had a baby changes her chazaka from not being required to do Yibum to in fact being a Shemeres Yavam. What's the difference? The answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, Reisha de Isur Kores Choshesh. Because the difference is, in the Reisha, there's a potential Isur Kores. If in fact Rivka is pregnant and had a baby, and Sara back home were to do Yibum, then if it turns out that Rivka had a baby, then Sara has done an Isur Kores by marrying her husband's brother. So therefore, we're Choshesh, and therefore we don't want her to do that. Sefer the Isur Lav Loi Choshashu, but in the Sefer, maximum all we're dealing with is an Isur Lav. Suppose that her mother-in-law did become pregnant and had a baby right before her husband was born. Fine. So that means she's a Shemeres Yavam. If she now goes and gets married as a Shemeres Yavam to somebody else, then she's over on an Isur Lav Loi Sia Ishes Hameis Achutzal Ishzar. So Rav Nachman says, a Lav, you don't have to be so concerned about to go and prevent her from getting married on the possibility of that. So Omar Rava says, come on, that doesn't work. Mech di hoda araisa, v'hoda araisa. After all, both things are equally an isu daraisa. Mali isu koris, mali isu lav. So what's the difference whether it's koris or lav? In other words, Rashi says, if it was a matter of the chachamim making a gzera, what to do or what not to do. Sure, we can distinguish between an Isur Kores and an Isur Lav, and we can say that Chachamim would find it necessary to make a Gzeira only in the case of an Isur Kores. But here, we're not talking about a Gzeira. Here, we're talking about, practically speaking, if she ends up doing Yibum in the one case, or if she ends up doing Yibum in the Reisha, or if she ends up marrying out in the Sefer, then you're talking about she has actually committed an Isur Lav or an Isur Kores or an Isur Lav, respectively. How can we be allowing her to do that? Fine, we're not going to make a general Xena, but how can we be allowing her to go and do that where there's the possibility that she's over on an even on Isur Lav? Ela Omar Rava. So Rava says, no, the difference is Reisha Chazaka the Yibum Veruba Lashuk, because it's like this. In the Reisha, the Chazaka would tell us that she has to do Yibum, because the Chazaka would tell us that again, when her husband left town, there was a Chazaka that she's not going to need, that she is going to need Yibum, because her husband at that point has no children, and we know he has brothers. The Ruba Lashuk, on the other hand, the Roiv, going against that, would tell us that she'd be allowed to marry freely, namely the Roiv, that her Sarah very likely became pregnant and had a baby. The Chazaka like Odif Ki Ruba. Now, Chazaka is not as powerful as Roiv. So now, on top of that, if you take the minority of women who miscarry, smoich la chazaka, and add it together to the chazaka, then So even if you're going to say, in other words, that the chazaka was that she needs yibum, and you're going to add to that the miut, that you're going to add to that the miut of women who miscarry, even then, b'havalei palga palga, so therefore all you're left with is a 50-50 chance that she can do yibum or that she can't do yibum. So if the chazaka had been stronger, we would have said, fine, we're still going to continue to follow the chazaka. But because the chazaka to begin with is weaker than the roiv. And on the other hand, Rashi says we are talking still according to the meos chayish lemiyota. So even if we consider the miyot of the ones who miscarry, then still all we've reached is 50-50. And therefore that's why the Mishnah is saying therefore that she can't do yibum. She can't base herself on the original chazaka and do yibum. On the other hand, she can't marry out either. Why she can't do chalitza, we'll talk about in the Gemara soon, but she can't marry out either until we figure out what happened. On the other hand, sefer chazaka l'shuk, beruba l'shuk. But in the sefer, where when her husband left, there was no chazaka that she's going to need yibum, because at that point, her husband didn't have any brothers. So the chazaka was that she's going to be able to marry out. And the ruba l'shuk, the roiv also will tell us that the roiv also of that... Namely, what do we say? The possibility is that her mother-in-law had a baby, and that baby might be a boy, and therefore she'd be a shemeres yavam. Okay, but there we said before that when we consider the majority of babies, you have a percentage that are miscarriages or stillbirths, and you have a percentage that are girls, and therefore we said the boys who are viable wind up being a miut. So the chazaka and the roiv both support one another. So in that case, the boys come out to be a miut within a miut. Even a mayor is not concerned about a miut within a miut. He's concerned about one miut, but not about two. So the Rava says that's the reason why in the Reisha we're saying that she can't marry until she finds out what happened with her tzara. Whereas in the Sefer, we're saying she can go and freely marry because the difference of in the Reisha, you have the Roiv and the Chazaka oppose each other, whereas in the Sefer, the Roiv and the Chazaka reinforce each other. Now, according to Rashi, it comes out still that Rava is explaining the entire Mishnah according to the Meir. And since we said before, the Halacha is not like the Meir, and the Meir is Chayish Lemiyota, the Chachamim are not, the result would be that the Halacha would not be according to our Mishnah. On the other hand, the number of Rishonim, beginning from Rav Hai Gaon, bring that Rava is not saying his answer specifically according to the mayor. Rava's answer works even according to the Chachamim. Therefore, we can say that our Mishnah, maybe if not the whole Mishnah, at least most of it, is following the Chachamim, and therefore the Halacha would be like it. And in fact, the Rif and the Rambam and then the various Poskim, Paskim, like our Mishnah. The two cases where in the first case where her tzara went to Medinas Hayam, then she has to wait. You can't do chalitza, can't marry or do yibum. Whereas in the sefer, she doesn't have to worry unless she finds out that her mother-in-law did in fact have a baby boy. Okay, we said in the Mishnah lo tinosi v'lo tisiyavim fuller. We said that when tzara stayed back home, Rivka together with their husband went overseas. Then we said that she can't marry and she can't do yibum until we find out what happened with her tzara. So the question is, la'olam, are you telling me she's stuck forever? Ziri says no. As far as herself, all she has to do is wait 3 months. We know, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that in general, when a woman's husband dies, divorces her, or yibum is going to be done, chalitza is going to be done, you always have to wait 3 months because she might be pregnant. So she has to wait the normal 3 months. Rashi points out that, now, on the face of it, what do you mean? My husband's away. How could I possibly be pregnant? Nevertheless, we did say earlier in the Masechta that always we say the 3-month rule applies across the board, even if, for example, she herself is not capable of having children. So she herself, Ze'iri says, would have to wait 3 months. Once the 3 months are over, in principle, she would be able to do chalitza, but l'chaber tartisha. But then she has to wait 9 months regarding her co-wife, because after all, her co-wife might be pregnant. So she has to wait 9 months. So meaning, in other words, so Zairi is going to say, Rashi says, Chalitza she can do right away after 3 months, like normal. But then she has to wait an additional 6 months till she can get married, because what if it turns out that Rivka, who was on the trip, is pregnant? And what if it was a viable baby? So therefore, so the chalitza that she did while her tzara was pregnant doesn't help her. The chalitza doesn't help. The chalitza that she did while her tzara was pregnant doesn't help her. You have to have the baby only when the baby is born. Once the baby is born, then it patters her. So fine, once 9 months, then she can get married no matter what. If the chalitza was a valid chalitza, then good, she can get married on that basis. And if the chalitza was not necessary because it turns out that it was a healthy baby, okay, well, after 9 months, the baby was born, and therefore we're good. Now, to be sure, I mean, you could have a pregnancy longer than 12 months. You could have a pregnancy longer than 9 months. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we had a case of Rabbi Taisfa, who said the woman's husband was out of town, and she was pregnant, and he accepted that the baby is kosher, even though it was a 12-month pregnancy. We talked about in Chassidus how Elio Anavi was born after such a pregnancy. But that kind of thing is a miut of a miut, and we said before, even the mayor is not concerned about that. So once 9 months pass, then Ze'iri says, then she's good no matter what. On the other hand, Rav Chanina says, no, it's true from her point of view, all she would have to wait is 3 months, the usual 3 months that you need before chalitza. But as far as her co-wife, her tzara, that she's going to have to wait indefinitely until she finds out whether Rivka had a baby or not. Well, the question is why? The tachlitz mimonafshech, why can't she do chalitza either way? Because again, if the chalitza is necessary because her tzara didn't have a baby, then good, the chalitza is done. And if not, then no chalitza is necessary. So the reason is, Abaya ba'oven, Rav Chanina ba'oven, Amitai Rayu, Gzeira Shemi Yehei Vlad Ben Kayama. It's true, in principle, she could do chalitza, but we make a gzeira. What if that baby, that hypothetical baby that her tzara has, what if it turns out to be a viable baby? And it turns out, therefore, that no chalitza was necessary. The nimtza'at matzricha kruz l'kohuna. So then the result is that you have to make an announcement that she is mutter to marry a kohen. Because after all, we know a chalitza is not allowed to marry a kohen. So like this, if it was a valid chalitza, she'd be possible to marry a kohen. Now that the chalitza was done, but now it turns out the chalitza was not necessary. She is, after all, kosher to marry a kohen. We're going to have to make an announcement to that effect. Gemara says, so what, v'litzucha? Okay, so make an announcement. The problem is, duma ikka dahavi b'chalitza v'lehavi b'chafroza. The problem is, you might have somebody who was there at the time of the chalitza, but was not there at the time of the announcement. As we learned when in Perek Mitzvah's Chalitza, the Chalitza is supposed to be done with a certain amount of publicity. That's why we said we have extra dayanim. You're supposed to have extra people over there in order to have a minyan. You want it to be publicized. So a person may have been there for the Chalitza. He wasn't there to hear the announcement afterwards. Then later on, when he sees that she gets married to a Kohen, the Amri, he's going to think to himself, Koshoru, Chalitza l'Kohen. Look at that. The Chalitza is allowed to marry a Kohen, and he's not going to realize that in this case, it turns out the Chalitza was unnecessary. A couple of things in that. First of all, the Gemara is going to say soon that if she was already possible with Kohona anyway, then that's not an issue. But besides that, a couple of interesting ideas that are brought up in this connection by Rishonim and Achronim. For the Prisha on tour asked the question, so what, because you might have some Amea Oretz or you might have some people who are out of town at the time of the cruise, therefore you're going to make this woman stuck forever? And he says, it's not even only a matter of that the other people may be misled. He says, it's a, she herself may be misled. She herself may be afterwards that, now imagine, let's say, for example, imagine that she does Chalitza, she marries, let's say, Yisrael, and then later on, the Yisrael dies. She's going to think to herself, listen, you know, I know that the chalitza that I did originally was unnecessary, and now I'm able to marry a Kohen. So therefore, she's going to generalize from that and think that a chalitza is allowed to marry a Kohen. She's not going to realize the distinction between, in this case, where it turns out the chalitza was unnecessary versus not. So it's not even for the Olam, it's for her herself. We want to avoid such things. There was a point that we showed him bring up, and, you know, an interesting idea. can we have her make a neder al das rabim that she won't marry a kohen, and then it'll be fine. Usually we have. Gemara tells us if a person makes a neder, they can cancel it. But if a person makes a neder al das rabim, that their neder is based on the understanding of that neder of the rabim, then they're not able to be made for it unless for a dvar mitzvah. So would it work? So we showed him talk about the question: would it work to do that in this case? If she makes a neder al das rabim, she won't marry a kohen, would that work and we'd allow her to do chalitza? And the consensus of the poskim is that no. There is given that the Gemara is going to say in a few lines that it does work if she's already a grusha or otherwise possible for a kohen, then the Meiri says, you know what, there is a way around it. If she's smart, what she'll do is while she's in limbo over here, she'll accept kiddushin from somebody else. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a suffix whether kiddushin are toifus by a shemeres yavam. So therefore, she's going to need a get in suffix. And once she has a get in suffix, then she can go ahead and do the chalitza because now she's possible to a kohen anyway. So the Meiri says she has a way of doing that then. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanan, well, you're telling me that whenever you have a chalitza because of a suffix, then you're not supposed to do it because it may turn out that in fact the chalitza was unnecessary. But let's consider the end of the previous perek said, Tanan. Now, we had throughout the Masechta cases where you have chalitza and not yibum, but that was generally where there was a gzeira d'rabbanan not to do the yibum for one reason or another. For example, shnios, for example, in issues involving achosik or kosai and other such things like that. So then, fine, that's not a matter of a suffix. That's a matter of it's a vaday that the chacham are telling her that given that daraisa, she could do either yibum or chalitza, and the chacham are telling her to do only chalitza. But cases like this, where we're talking about where the chalitza itself is being done because of suffix, you're telling me we can't do that. Tanan, look at the end of the previous parak, where a woman went out of town and she says, Nitan li ben bim dinesayam. She says that I had a baby in the dinesayam, but omra mes pniva hakach mes baili. And then she says, my son died and then my husband died. So we said, in other words, so when she left, she had a chazaka of being that she would eventually be chayev in yibum if her husband dies. Then when she says, I have a baby, that took away that chazaka because that makes it that now she's potter. But then Apesha also Apesha hit her. So now when she says, now when she says the baby died and then the husband died, then she's back to being chayiv in yibum. So therefore, ne'menes, so we believe her and she can do yibum. But the Mishnah continued, mes baili v'achakach mes b'li. But if she says my husband died and then my son, ainu ne'menes, we don't believe her to the extent of being potter from yibum or chalitza. But we do have to be concerned that what she's saying is correct. Therefore, she needs chalitza and not yibum. Now, don't you have the same problem? Tosfos, by the way, we get on Omar Aleph explains that why don't we say that she has a migui? She could have said, my son is still alive, and then she's potter from chalitza or yibum. So Tosfos explains that you actually have Adim, that Tosfos explains, you actually have Adim, that both the husband and the child are dead, so now she doesn't have a migui anymore. So we're saying that she's saying that first the husband died, and then when he died, their son was still alive, therefore she's potter from chalitza or yibum. And in fact, it might be the other way around, so we have to be choshesh, and therefore chalitza is fulem siyabemes, so she can only do chalitza, not yibum. Now, if you're telling me Abaye ba'oven and Rav Chanan ba'oven, that where in cases like that, you can't do chalitza because of the problem of kruz l'kohuna, the fact that you have to make an announcement that she's still allowed to marry a kohen. So don't you have the same thing? Maybe Adim will come and say, as she said, that in fact, that it's true, as she said, that their son was still alive when the husband died. Don't you have the same problem then, that you're going to have to make an announcement after the fact, after the chalitza, that she is allowed to marry a kohen, and you have the same problem as before. And yet the Mishnah doesn't seem to be making any such distinction. The answer is Amar Papa Begrusha. So the Papa says the case of the Mishnah at the end of the previous parak would be where she was already a grusha or some other kind of psula l'kohona. So therefore, there's no problem. If we're marrying kohen, therefore we don't need kruz l'kohona. But you're right. If she was still in principle kosher to marry a kohen, were it not for the chalitza, then in fact you wouldn't be able to do the chalitza. Rav Chiya Breder Rav Huna Amar, but Amra Aniva Hunech Beinu Bamara. Rav Chiya Breder Rav Huna says a different case. There could be a case where she says that he and I, meaning all three of us, me and my husband and my son, were all hiding in a cave and there was nobody there to give Edus. And now she's saying the order in which they died. So now there's no problem that Edom might come. And in fact, Mephoshim explained that if Edom did come, then in effect, by based on what she said, we would know that they're false Edom. Therefore, we don't have to worry about that Edom might come and that it might turn out that the Chalitza was invalid and we need to cruise the corner. But you're right. If the Gemara is saying, if you didn't have either of those, if she was kosher the Kohona and there's the possibility of Edom coming, then you're right. We can't do Chalitza based on a suffix because of this problem of cruise the Kohona. Going back to a little earlier in the Gemara, where we said that Zairi had said La'atzma shloish hadashim, where L'chaber tatish hadashim, and Rav Chanina had said that no, for herself 3 months, for L'chaber to La'olam. So we're saying that ultimately, we're saying that the halacha is generally like Rav Chanina. When there's a problem of cruz l'kohona, then she's stuck until we find out what happens. But when there's no issue of cruz l'kohona, like we said, when she's a grusha, or when there's no possibility of edim, then we allow her to remarry. So Rashi learns that it means that herself, meaning the woman who stayed in town, only has to wait 3 months, but then she has to wait an additional 6 months before she can remarry in case her Yavama, and in case her Tzara was pregnant. The Rambam seems to learn it the other way around. It says La'atzma means the woman who went on the trip with the husband needs to wait only 3 months. As far as the one who remained back home, she needs to wait 9 months on her. She needs to wait an additional 6 months on her behalf in case that one became pregnant before their husband left town. Okay, but in any case, the point is, so we can do that. We can do that, and then she can do chalitza, even though it's only a suffix, if we don't have the problem of cruz l'kohona. But if we have the problem of cruz l'kohona, if otherwise she would have been kosher to marry a kohen, then we can't do that because then there might be somebody who wasn't here with that cruz and mistakenly is going to think, and she herself, as the Purisha says, may mistakenly think that in the future she is allowed to marry a kohen. Okay, Mishnah says, Shtei Yevamos. Suppose you have two sisters-in-law. So two brothers are married to two women. The two women are not sisters. They're unrelated. Again, we'll call them Sora and Rivka. So till now, the first Mishnah was talking about, you have the two women are married to one husband. Here you're talking about two husbands and their two wives. Zua Medes Mes Baili, Zua Medes Mes Baili. Each one says, my husband has died. Now, we learned in the previous perek that a woman can't give edus on behalf of her yavama that her husband is dead, because we said the yavamas dislike each other, and there's a possibility that she's saying it in order to mess her up. She's going to get remarried, and then it's going to turn out her husband is alive, and you have all the consequences. But here, each one is saying my husband died. So if it weren't for issues of yibum, there'd be no problem. Each of them can get married. But the problem is that here you have there's yibum involved. Therefore, zu asurim ifnei baila shozu, v'zu asurim ifnei baila shozu. Each one is asur because of the potential that the other one's husband is still alive.
They mess each other up.
In other words, yeah. When Sara says my husband is dead, fine, that helps Sara. That now, fine, we know your husband is dead, but do we know that your husband's brother is dead? No, because you can't give Adris on that. And the fact that you didn't say anything about whether he's dead or not, and your Sara. Okay, not your sorry, your Vama can't, the fact that she says Adris that her husband is dead doesn't help you because you're your Vamas and you can't give Adris to each other. So therefore each one is stuck because each one potentially may need evil. What about Lazu Adim or Lazu Adim? What if among the two women, what if Sara has Adim that her husband is dead and Rivka does not have Adim? So actually having Adim makes things worse for her. It seems counterintuitive, but in fact, we think about it, we'll realize the one who has Edim remains Osir, the one who does not have Edim becomes Mutter. Because let's consider, you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and they're married to two women. We'll call them Sara and Rivka because we've been using Rachel and Leah throughout the Masechta for sisters. So Sara and Rivka. Reuven's married to Sara. Shimon is married to Rivka. You know what? Actually, let's better do Reuven to Rivka, Shimon to Sara, because that way we have Reish, Reish, Shin, Shin. Fine. Okay. So Reuven is married to Rivka. Shimon is married to Sara. Now, if now Edim come and say that Reuven is dead, And there's no edim that Shimon is dead, but Sarah says that her husband Shimon is dead. So let's consider. When Sarah says that her husband Shimon is dead, we can believe her. We've said earlier, Isha Daiko Mitzvah. Does she have to do Yibum? No, because there are Edim that her brother-in-law Reuben is dead. So there's no more brothers. So there's nothing to talk about. Therefore, she's potter from Yibum or Chalitza because there's nobody to do Yibum or Chalitza with. So therefore, Sarah is free to go. On the other hand, Reuben's wife, Rachel, let's consider that she's saying her husband is dead. Oh, she doesn't have to say. She has Edim that her husband is dead. Fine. But there's no evidence that's acceptable la halacha that her husband's brother Shimon is dead, because the only one who's saying that Shimon is dead is her sister-in-law, and a sister-in-law can't give eders. Right. Therefore, she's stuck on the possibility that she might still be a shemeres yavam for Shimon.
Rachel is stuck.
So Rachel, the wife of Reuben, so even though she has edim that her husband is dead, but the fact that she has edim, she's the one who's worse off than her sister-in-law who does not have
edim. She allows her sister-in-law to go free, but she herself is stuck.
Right. What about Lazu Bunim but Lazu Ain Bunim? What about if one of them has children and the other one does not? So the one who has children, so now we're talking about there's no Edim, but the one who has children obviously is Potter from Chalitza or Yibum. So Eschi Eshla Bunim Uteresvesha in Labonim Asura, the one who has children will be Mutter to remarry. The one who doesn't have children will be also for the same reason, because she might actually be a Shemeres Yavam. For the same reason, because we can't accept the Eidos that her brother-in-law, because now it's not Eidos. Now we're talking about where each one of them is saying, my husband is dead. Same problem as in the Reisha of the Mishnah, where Rachel's statement that her husband Reuven is dead is good enough for us. And Rachel has children with Reuven. Or it doesn't even matter. Reuven could have children.
She has children.
Well, we know that Rachel has children. Yes. So she's good. She's free to go. But now Sarah, Shimon's wife, is still stuck. She's saying that her husband Shimon is dead. Fine, so far so good. But is Reuven dead? We don't know. The only one who's telling us Reuven is dead is Rachel, and we can't accept that.
Rachel has no edim.
And Rachel has no edim, Sarah and Shimon had no children, and for Sarah to say my husband is dead and my Yavam is dead, my husband is dead, fine, but my Yavam is dead, the only one, she only has Rachel say so for that, and Rachel we can't accept because we said Yavamas can't give Edris for one another. Right. By the way, in the case where they have Edim versus not Edim, Tosfos asks, isn't that fairly obvious? It seems counterintuitive, but as soon as we think about it, we realize the logic, but why does the Mishnah even have to tell us? The point is, Tosfos says that maybe the point is that you would have thought, given that it's so counterintuitive, shouldn't we make a Zera that neither of them can get married because you might easily confuse the situation? And we're saying that, no, you don't have to do that. The one that had the Edim can't get married, but the one that didn't have the Edim could. What about Nisyabmu Umesu? Now let's talk about another case. Till now, we've been talking about where the only brothers were the respective two brothers. You have Reuven and Shimon, no other brothers. So in other words, if we find out that both Reuven and Shimon are dead, then both of their wives are potter. And if we find out if only one of them is dead, then we have these concerns. Now, what happens if they have other brothers as well? They also have Levi and Yehuda and so forth. So now let's say these two women, Rachel. So now these two women, Sarah and Rivka, Nisyabu. Yeah. So let's say, for example, Reuven and Shimon went on a trip. We have now these cases where we're saying that Reuven and Shimon are dead. Where their wives or Edim respectively are saying that they're dead. Now let's say, if we know that Reuven and Shimon are both dead, they can both marry.
They're married, on both sides.
Right. Let's say, for example, they also have other brothers, Levi and Yehuda, in town. Now, even if there's no Edim, we're saying the fact that Rivka says my husband Reuven is dead is reason enough for her to remarry, and therefore she can even do Yibum. We said Isha Daiko Mitzvah. The same way, when Sarah says my husband is dead, that's good enough for her to do Yibum with Yehuda.
With Levi or Yehuda,
one of them, right? So Nisyabmu Umesu Hayivamin. Now, what happens is later on, Levi and Yehuda died. So now they're back to the same situation. The point is that you might have that either Reuven or Shimon might be alive. So even though now what happened, we allowed them to marry Levi and Yehuda on the chazaka that their respective husbands are dead. But now you want them to be able to marry out Now you want them to be able to freely marry Lashuk. So now we can't. So now we have a problem. Asuris Lehinase, they would be also to marry out Lashuk. Because what if their husbands are in fact still alive? It comes out, in other words, that you're trying to take the edus of a Yavama and use it on behalf of the other woman, and you can't do that. So in other words, let's draw out the scenario over here. So to begin with, we had Rachel came and said, my husband Reuven is dead. Sarah came and said, my husband Shimon is dead. Now, if there were no other brothers, then we would say we have a problem because we can't use the address of Rachel on behalf of Sarah or vice versa. But now let's say, fine, we said, never mind, Reuven and Shimon. Okay, so we have Levi and Yehuda. So they can do Yibum because fine, each one of them has address, each one of them saying for her own husband that he's dead. So that allows her to do Yibum. But now what happens when Levi and Yehuda die? Now we have to consider, well, does Sarah's husband Shimon still have a surviving brother Reuven or not? And does Rivka's husband, Reuven, have a surviving brother, Shimon, or not? How would we know that not? Only based on the edus of her Yavama. Only based, what would we have to do in order to allow Rachel to remarry? We would have to go back to the original fact that Sara had said that Shimon is dead and therefore allow her to remarry. But we can't do that. Sara's edus is not good enough for Rivka because they're Yavamas and vice versa. So therefore we're back to that they're stuck.
Even with Shimon,
middle they married Levi and Yehuda, and you would think the edus that their husbands were dead was strong enough to allow them to be married. How can it not be enough to allow them now to marry Lashuk? Nevertheless, we don't. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar Omer, but Rabbi Elazar says no. Once they were mutter to marry the Yavamin, once you said there was a chazaka that their husband's dead, now we're dead. Now we're not going to say that we're going to undo that because you're dealing with Adris of Yavamin. Well, we'll see. Kolakavod. I mean, we don't do that between the chachamim. The chachamim have their logic, and Rabbi Elazar has his logic. We're going to learn. We'll learn in the Gemara. The details tomorrow, but we'll start one piece of Gemara now. Right. The Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Lazu Edim of Vanim, Lazu Loy Edim Loy Banim. What happens if one of these women, what happens if Rivka has Edim that her husband is dead and she has children, and Lazu Loy Edim Loy Banim, Sarah has neither Edim that her husband is dead nor children, Shtei and Mutaris, both of them are going to be Mutar. Because Rachel is going to be able to remarry because she has children. She's not subject to Yibum or Chalitza in the first place. Sarah is going to be able to marry because of Rachel's aiding. She wouldn't be able to if Rachel herself said that Reuven is dead, because we said it's a Yavama can't give aiders for her Yavama. But here there's aidim, so therefore Sarah can rely on Rachel's aidim and be able to remarry.
So the aidim are there for her and for her.
So therefore they help both of them, right? Well, in the case of Rachel, you don't need. In the case of Rachel, the Edim allow us to say that she's not an Eishes Ish anymore. In the case of Sarah, they tell us that she's not a Shemeres Yavam. So she herself is saying that her husband is dead. So she's not an Eishes Ish on the basis of her own statement, and she's not a Shemeres Yavam on the basis of her Yavama's Edim. Right? Nisyabmu Umesu. And then, as the Mishnah had said, if they did do Yibum, and then the Yavamim, died, Asurin the Hinase, then he said they're also to be married. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Horuva Hutra the Yavamim, Hutra the Choladam. So now we'll deal with in the Gemara tomorrow what's Rabbi Elazar's reason, what's the underlying reason for Rabbi Elazar's Shita, and why do the Chachamim disagree with him? So we'll deal with that tomorrow, Beth Hashem.